All right, we are back recording January 19th, UFC 270 fight week. Ed Carbajal and Matt Hawkins here, Coast to Coast Combat Hour. As always, brought to you by AllAccessMMA.com. Make sure you check them out for some UFC 270 related news at AllAccessMMA.com. We missed a week, Matt, so got some catching up to do, got some splaining to do.
First off, good to be back. I think the news we missed actually was kind of funny considering, I guess, my little rant and you talking about the UFC being a one percenter. More disappointing news coming out of the UFC is that they decided to kick up the pay-per-view rate to, $74.99 now, plus your $5.99 a month subscription to ESPN Plus. So
yeah, plus if you have Fight Pass, if you're trying to do everything, you know, on this.
All that aside, yeah. I talked about it. Prices have been out of control. Now, with that said, I did book for UFC 272. But prices were normal. I mean, just an example, to get into 272, the base price was $125. The base price for 270 was $250. Let's not even get into
Madison Square Garden.
Yeah, but that's New York. That's where you can name more than six guys fighting on the card, too. Yeah. I mean, you know, not that you can't name some guys, but, you know, this to pike it for this pay-per-view isn't the best look in the world. When they do it with McGregor fights and stuff, you kind of understood it because you knew that there was a supply and demand, you know, that they had people wanting to buy it. I don't know if there's a huge pay-per-view demand for this weekend's fight. We will find that out. Mm-hmm. And that'll go along with when we have talked about in the past about Ngannou's, star ability and his maybe future plans, depending on.
Yeah.
How this fight works out, but I'm just gonna be straight up and say it. I don't really know anybody who pay for pay-per-views anymore. And half the people that used to pay for them don't even know how to buy them anymore. So
I know it's not something easy to do anymore either. They keep saying they simplified it, but you know, as often as I talk to and a couple of my training partners that do listen to this podcast have actually been complaining about it's like, okay, what do I have to do to be able to afford to keep up with this sport, you know, because of the pricing and the paying for the EM. A lot of them, actually a couple of them, dropped ESPN Plus and they're just like, you know, if I really want to see one, I'll go to a bar, which is, you know, that's what I wind up. I mean, pre-pandemic, as you know, people follow me on Twitter. If I'm not covering an event or I'm not, you know, in the arena, then I'm freaking at a bar watching these pay-per-views and tweeting about the clientele that's sitting next to me talking shit about the fighters. Mm-hmm. Yeah, while they're like, you know, 300 plus pounds. So I think it's going to really be better for places like that. But considering our situation right now with being able to go out and stuff, I mean, that's still a coin toss too. So I don't know, man. I don't like it. They asked Dana White about it at the post-fight presser for UFC Vegas 46, which was kind of a nice main event anyway for their first event of the year. And he said that was all part of the ESPN deal, and even he kind of didn't seem like he was a fan of another increase. I mean, because that's ESPN money. I mean, that he said that was ESPN's decision, not with the UFC. Apparently, their contract says that, you know, how they have to deliver a certain number of events. And I mean, we already know that the UFC has been driving a lot of traffic towards the whole ESPN Plus, Disney Plus, all that stuff. So we'll see what happens.
Would you guess then? I mean, this is all speculation, but would you guess that the pay-per-view numbers aren't as good as that they try to lead them on to be? If ESPN feels the need to try to boost it, because to me that would make me feel like they've got like their 200,000 solid people that buy the pay-per-view every single time. And they know if they add an extra $5 to that, that's an extra, you know, million bucks. So I wonder if that, you know what I mean, because if you're yeah, blowing the world off with pay-per-view records and stuff, you're not gonna, you wouldn't throw this monkey wrench into it. Why would you risk wanting to alienate
especially anybody? when everybody's complaining about inflation and how things are getting expensive and just harder to get stuff. And I mean, they could probably on their end use that as their excuse as driving the price up too. But I'm kind of just like, I don't know, man. I mean, you're the one that used to say ever since they did this whole ESPN Plus thing, you were the one that called them out first and like saying like, how are we going to get, how do we know if the numbers are true or not? You know,
yeah.
Everybody's throwing around the best numbers that they can without pointing at it to any specific promoter or promotion. You know, there's a lot of folks out there that tout, you know, you can look at numbers. I mean, right now we're probably the number one podcast on Wednesday night at 8:55 PM on the East Coast. I can say that because you know what I mean? Like there's a way for that to be true.
Uh-huh. You can always manipulate the numbers.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm with you, man.
On the same week Dana White comes out bragging about how the UFC is now valued at $5 billion at the same time to decide that that's the time to hike it. To me, like I said, it is ESPN's money because the UFC is already getting paid no matter if they sell one pay-per-view or 4.5 million. So it's got to lead me to believe that that's ESPN just trying to scrape up some more money from their loyal base of people that probably buy every single pay-per-view. Yeah. And I used to be a part of that, but we make the regular salary, that's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. No, you're right. But that's the thing about the regular, the new super fan. I mean, cause you know, you're the super fan of this side of this podcast for MMA, but the new super fan, the one that's on TikTok and making, you know, calling Dustin Poirier and all that, you know what I mean? Like, That's the one that's probably cool with shelling out that amount of money. And that's their target demographic now. I mean, they got us. You know, they've had us for the last almost 30 years. So they don't have to worry about us, you know, drumming them over, doing a podcast, you know, stuff like that that creates buzz. It's these people that they want the next ones. They want yeah. our kids, and they want our kids' kids. So,
and they don't want us knowing that the cards used to actually be stacked. And that they've went completely to the boxing model, essentially, and they're selling pay-per-views based off one and a half fights. You know, maybe in this case, two fights because you got two title fights.
Well, so I'm wondering how many double ups on. I mean, are they going to justify the cost by doubling up? Like, are we going to always get two titles? Because they tried to do it with the one we talked about last time we recorded, and it literally got pushed back like hours later or whatever. The Max Holloway was supposed to be Jan Sterling and Holloway and Volkanovski, and then that got all fudged up. So,
yeah, they moved those fights to 273, removed Holloway, added Korean Zombie. So that's the new April 9th 273 main events is Volkanovski, Zombie, and Sterling and Jan. And then you talk, so that's two title fights. But then if we backtrack to what they created, the one I'm going to in March, 272, there's no title fights on it. It's right now it's Masvidal and Covington, which is a fun fight, a fight that actually kind of gets me out there because it's two guys that I like. I root for both of the guys in general. I know that's not a very popular thing to say about Covington these days, and maybe not so much about Masvidal, depending on who you're talking to, but I root for the guys. I like their fight styles. They put on exciting fights, and I actually look forward to a little bit of a, you know, probably a ginned up grudge match, but at least there's a little bit of a storyline behind that. Currently, there's no co-main event. I know there's heavy rumors right now about Diaz and Poirier, which would obviously slingshot that event to a more of a must-see show. I have a hard time seeing Poirier and Diaz co-main to Masvidal and Covington. That seems a little strange. They'd probably just flip him.
Yeah, I mean, they would probably just flip it around and make
or they or they but... sell it as a, you know, dual main event, you know, which could be done. And it honestly would save the event or not save the event because it hasn't happened yet. And, you know, we'll see what happens. And there's some good fights on it.
Yeah. But
the days of just having, you know, a pride shockwave kind of UFC card is seems to have sailed. I mean, I you know, I see fights announced where it's a 7-5 fighter against a 7-4 fighter. And I don't think Super Bowl of MMA when I think of UFC.
Like, not anymore. I mean, that's always, and Dana White's even said like, that's kind of like what their goal is. And maybe you don't see it like that. And neither do I, but that's kind of what they're getting to with, when you look at all the money that's being thrown into events, through sponsorships, the whole crypto.com thing, and you know, all these people that are throwing DraftKings all over the places in every sport now. Shout out to New York sports betting, by the way. It's definitely one of these things where they're becoming this behemoth in the sport. And the good thing about it is, I'll say, because this will kind of help us segue off of it, because they're getting so big and there's all these like small paywalls or big paywalls and then pay-per-views, other promotions are starting to pop up before where it was harder to just even get going. I mean, you saw Anthony Pettis has got a promotion. Khabib's got his promotion that's free on Flexcast or whatever the app is. That's
fun card too. I can't think of all the fights off the top of my head. I know Spong and Karatanov is the main event, but fun fight card. I mean,
Because they're doing so well now, you're able, and then the reason for folks that follow the podcast, the reason we didn't record last week was so we could watch our homegirls compete in Invicta FC last Wednesday, and that was all free on YouTube, and they had sponsorships and everything for it. It was a 6-fight card on a Wednesday night, and I didn't mind that at all, especially because we could just watch it without having to worry about how and, you know, signing into it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. If you miss something, you could go back and watch it on YouTube. You know, yeah. I mean, you bring up a good point about like the kind of the new UFC fans, and it's not here to bash them, because without those new fans, the sport would eventually fade. But the reality is that the UFC and these arenas prefer the fan that comes in to watch 2 fights and sits in the bar for the first 14 fights buying $17 Heinekens. I mean, that's just the reality. Me and you sitting in our seat, eating a hot dog and a Sprite for, you know, 8 hours watching fights. Doesn't do what the arenas and what the UFC really is looking for. That's why they're going to the boxing model. Yeah. You know, you set it up where you bring the fans in at 7 o'clock. They, you know, or, you know, a couple minutes for the early prelims, they go have, you know, 8 beers, drop $200 in the bar, and then they go sit in their seat and watch the last 3 fights. I mean, everybody's been to an event where somebody comes stumbling into their seat, you know, at the co-main event. I mean, that's what really sells. And that's why we talk about like fight placements and stuff, I think is becoming more of a thing or a lack of a thing, because, you know, I think Kaposa Grabaka Hitman said it best. Like, it seems like they just draw names out of a hat for, it's just a random fight card. Like there's no, you know, like what was the co-main event this last week? Was it Sherman and
Collier?
And Collier, like, I mean,
that was actually not a bad fight though.
And that doesn't mean anything, but like,
well, you got to remember they lost like 3 fights on that card. Some of them are going to be shifted to the next couple of events, which is another thing. I'm glad you mentioned that, because if you follow me on Twitter, one of the outlets I do picks for, it's not Sure Dog, because they actually make predicting fights fun still. It's probably the only thing I do actively all the time there. Shout out to Jay Petrie and Ben Duffy. Ben, who's been on the podcast like way back when we were starting. I got to get one of them back on here soon. Excuse me. You know, they make picking the fights fun, but they do it at the appropriate time. Like, Ben doesn't even ask me my picks until the day before weigh-ins. And now some outlets want their picks in early. You and I have always been on when we do this podcast, because it helps me do my picks. And we're going to do the 270 picks. I have the draft ready to go. Talking to you sometimes helps me change my mind, especially when I'm throwing money down. Now I find it's best to wait till as last minute as possible because of COVID, because of the way things happen. You saw what happened at UFC Vegas 46. They lost 3 fights. Shout out to Nolan King, who put up the memo about the COVID protocols over at MMA Junkie. And then we now have 3 prime opportunities to lose a fight or multiple fights on a UFC card. They get the at-home test before they get to the event. Travel day, if anyone follows the sport, knows travel day is Tuesday. So when they arrive that Tuesday of fight week, they have to do another COVID test. That's number 2. And then weigh-in day is number 3. So if they pop hot for any of those 3 moments, a fight could be off. And again, last week was a perfect example of why it's best to wait till last minute. I mean, you and I always, we have the luxury of the podcast to put out a disclaimer. We're doing it midweek and anything could happen. We've been saying that for almost all of COVID already. So I just feel like, I mean, again, I just wanted to point that out because that's something that aggravated me this week. But I think we need to be careful.
Did I misread it? Are they still testing, quote unquote, vaccinated fighters and cornermen?
So or
did they pull the tests on them?
That's specific to California. If you read the Nolan wrote an update actually to his announcement, and I think ESPN also wrote about it, about how it's just because that's the CSA, California State Athletic Commission's call on the vaccinated status. So that's only for California. So we still, you know, it's different. It's going to be anywhere they go, they're going to be subject to the commissions that are in those states.
That's going to lead to chaos too.
Mm-hmm.
People are going to, you know, they had issue with the rules of, you know, grounded opponents. Now no one's going to know if they need, you know, that'll be quite.
It's going to be interesting for sure. Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be interesting, but
you mentioned Invicta last week. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you want to jump in and if you want to say anything. I did watch the fights. I enjoy Wednesday night. I mean, I know we normally do the podcast, but if we have to take a Wednesday night off once every, you know, 2 months, 3 months to have a Wednesday night Invicta event, I'm all for it. I like the six fight card. I like the pacing. Like you said, it seemed like it was over by what, 11 o'clock or so your time.
Yeah.
Maybe even before then, 10:30.
Yeah.
No, I remember it ending and still for me, you know, it started at 5:00 by like 7:30. I still had time to kind of do some of my evening routine, which is awesome. And, you know, fights were okay. I'm not going to, you know, it didn't go as well as we would have liked for some of the friends of the show.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I mean, of course, it's our podcast, so I can say. I mean, I didn't like watching Monica and Shamir, you know, lose. But, no. I mean, not for nothing, shout out to those two young ladies, especially Shamir, who she and I were texting the Sunday of when she was literally, like, rushing to get out there and weigh, and, you know, cut as much weight as she could to me. She didn't make weight. Obviously, if you only give her, like, 2.5 days notice, it's going to be hard to make. Mm-hmm. Make the contract.
And she saved that fight. So
yeah.
I'm sure that they knew that that was something that was going
to
come down.
Yeah, but if you watch it, I mean, if you rewatch her fight, I mean, from the beginning to the end, you couldn't see a happier. I've never seen someone so happy to lose. But
no,
I mean,
she was smiling in the fight.
Yeah. So, but the thing is, when we had her on the podcast back in July, remember she said she was like, "I'm ready to go." Like she did what she did with her business and with everything through COVID, and then she just now she's just her, it's her passion, and she went out there to have fun, and they're gonna have her back from what she told me. So I was just happy to see her get out there. And one thing that she told us, that I mean, you know, again, she lost, but her head movement definitely improved. That's why she got dropped with a liver shot, because if you remember, she told us she had a boxing trainer come out there to the gym to kind of teach boxing. You could tell she's been working with them, because she slipped like a couple of punches before the body shot came. And I was like, that's the first thing that fired off in my head is when we spoke to her about the boxing trainer. So I think we it's going to be fun. Invicta's going to be fun this year.
Yeah. I mean, it was clear from my perspective that you saw somebody who took a fight on 2.5 days notice and somebody who'd probably been training for 8 weeks, you know, based off of just the ferocity, I would guess say would be the word to come out of Pasquale, you know, and you know, like you said, when you've been in, you know, I haven't been in a fight camp, but I imagine when you've been in fight camp for 8 days, you're everything's a little bit more tense and ready to go than, you know, kind of just like, okay, yeah. I'm fighting, I'm on a plane, I'm here, let's do it, you know. And but props to her again for taking the fight, and again, just for having a great attitude and you know, and being a good representative of you know, it didn't go her way. She could have easily walked out of that ring, not said a word to anything, and everybody would have been okay with that. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've seen it happen a million times. For her to stand up, you know, talk about it, you know, admit she lost and you know, went down to a liver, you know, punched the liver. And
yeah, which everybody goes down to liver shots. I don't care who you are.
No, it happens, you know. So that didn't end well. Haley Cowan looked great against Monica Franco. I mean, controlled the fight. Was able to finish it, you know.
Yeah, I mean, and they were both super. I mean, the way the fight got made, the way everything. You know, I covered that story, speaking with Monica a couple of times, and you know, Monica, you know, that was her first. She had COVID when she was supposed to be on the Invicta FC 44. She had to pull out because she got COVID and like the worst version of it, and fought through that, got better, and you know, she still showed up to fight. And I mean, it was a smart fight on Cowan's part too. I mean, she uh-huh. she didn't want to know part of Franco on you know, at range striking. So, you know, it is what it is. But we'll see. I mean, it was nice to see her in Invicta too. I feel like that's hopefully she can keep fighting there.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, you know, Cowan has 8 pro fights. Franco, you know, came in with 2. I mean, I know she had a nice, you know, a lot of amateur fights, which mm-hmm. against some name opponents, but, you know, like you said, it looked to me like you had a fight where you had a lady who was able to control the fight, play it safe. You know, she's been bidding to try to get on that, the next UFC, was it 271 in Houston.
Yeah.
And she looked like somebody who just fought, like you said, fought the fight smart and did what, you know, she took advantage of her advantages and played it smart. So again, you know, anybody who's been around this sport knows things don't always go your way. It's how you rebound from them. Mm-hmm. All, you know, again, when you've had 2 professional fights, you have a lot of room to continue your career. You know, nobody's turning the the page on the chapter of your career after 2-3 fights. So
no,
you're gonna have plenty of time. Looks like Invicta's kind of moving towards, you know, bringing in and working in younger or less maybe established talent, as opposed to in the past where, you know, they were kind of the only show in town for the females. So you had, you know, some the Baszlers and the McMahons and the Cyborgs and the Conans and, you know, Kaufmans and stuff like that. So you kind of, they're almost turning into a little bit more of a farm system now to actually develop some talent. So I think that's going to work out well. I don't know if Cowan will stay in Invicta that long. She does have a lot of the intangibles, I guess you would say, that could potentially make her real popular for somebody like the UFC to sign. Especially if is she from Houston? Is that why she wants to get on that card? Is that
yeah? And it's on her birthday, and my editor did a whole interview with her about that whole deal. So
yeah,
that's at MyMMAnews.com if people want to check it out.
Yeah, and the UFC pretty much is bouncing between a couple states right now, and Texas is kind of one of them. So any chance, you know, if you're from Jackson, Florida, or if you're from Florida, you know, Texas or Nevada right now, you've got a good chance to get in on.
Yeah, COVID. If you remember what Dana White said when they asked him about how you're going to handle COVID in 2022, they asked him at the end of last year, he was like, Apex, Houston, Jacksonville, Abu Dhabi. So if you're in those areas, it's just a good chance, and you know, you have a negative COVID test, there's a good chance you can get on a card and you fight.
Yeah, speaking of changes, I know you tweeted out, and I think I might have tweeted that I thought it was changed. Have you heard anything, any updates on the possible Brooklyn card, or does that look like it's moving to Jacksonville? Have you looked into that any farther?
No, I haven't. I mean, I live the UFC stuff like that. I mean, just follow Nolan King.
I mean, I just didn't know if you had heard anything local around there. It seems like the UFC probably playing it smart. I'm surprised they're coming into California, to be honest.
Well,
they picked a friendly county and city to them, so that you know, being the Orange County, Anaheim, there it's a little more conducive to the UFC crowd. And
yeah, I hope doing. It's funny you're saying that, because I know Sean Merriman tweeted out some frustration with trying to get Lights Out continuing to go for their next event. I mean, I know he had talked to me about doing stuff in Resorts World in Vegas. So, I mean, that might be more of a reality for him if they're giving him the runaround out in your neck of the woods.
He's out of Burbank, which is LA. I mean, he's right in the lion's den of, it can't be easy to do anything. I mean, you know, I know they're asking for vax cards and, or a negative test for the Anaheim event, which I was a little surprised by. They're not in Vegas still. So, and that's per Ticketmaster right now, when you look for tickets, and when you Google T-Mobile Arenas, you know, what their rules are, for entering. So, yeah, I can see him having some issues in Burbank, and if he could get out there to Vegas, or, you know, I mean, even Arizona or some of these other local, you know, closer states, he probably could be fairly successful. And you have some built-in fan bases out in this part of the country. So he's got a lot of places he can bounce. I've honestly meant to talk about in the past. I'm surprised he's been as successful over this last, you know, 2 years out of LA, because, I mean,
Well, I mean,
there hasn't been a lot coming out of LA.
I mean, yeah, I mean, he did have to put the whole thing on pause for all of, you know, most of the whole COVID situation when it started. And I mean, Lights Out 5, 6, and 7, those are three events towards the end of the last year. So I'm hoping, because I mean, if you haven't watched them again on Fubo Sports, that's another one, another platform where MMA is on a non-paywall that you just, I mean, you probably have Fubo Sports Network and don't even know it. So if you have, like, I have the Tubi app, and I didn't even know Fubo Sports Network was part. That's how I've been watching them. It's like,
yeah, and you can just Google Fubo, I think Fubo.com or whatever. Fubo.
Yeah, just, yeah, and it's on.
and it's there. Yeah, yeah. So that's how I watched it. I just put it on my phone and then screened it right to my TV.
Man, fun fights too, and a lot of guys, you know, a lot of their competitors get picked up not long afterward by the UFC or Bellator. So It's definitely like Spark Carlisle fought there, Spike Carlisle, and I'm trying to think who else. A couple of guys got signed literally like weeks after they fought there. So,
no, they've been good. You know, quick shout out to Tough Enough, the amateur event out of Vegas, big event. Jeff Meyer, who I'm actually Facebook friends with, and we've had Mason Icobellis fought for them, and Corey Turner, and heck, Ronda Rousey, a bunch of people coming up fought for them. They are returning after 2 years away. They're actually having an event in downtown Las Vegas on March 4th. So I'm going for the UFC on the 5th, but I'm going to go out there and I'm going to support Tough Enough.
As, nice.
You know, and I'm actually kind of excited about getting back to that, the little local regional scene around Vegas there, and getting a chance to kind of walk around.
Yeah, get some people and come on this thing and plug it up.
Yeah, no, that's the thing, and maybe I'll even shoot a message out to the owner there. I know he's gonna probably get his hands full now trying to promote this in the next six weeks. But it looks like in certain parts of this country we're gonna start to get back to what the world that we got used to, and unfortunately for me and you, we're probably gonna be trailing in that.
You're waiting a while, yeah. Yeah, be waiting a while. But, I mean, as far as what we can watch, I mean, this weekend we might as well get right into it. UFC 270. Let me pop up the card here. UFC.com. Champ versus interim champ. Francis Ngannou versus Cyril Gahn. Derek Lewis calls him Cyril, so I always thought that was funny. But, yeah, man, I'm into it. I'm happy to see the first pay-per-view of the year. Super happy that, I mean, not for nothing, co-main event is Brandon Moreno and Davison Figueiredo 3, and I don't mind that at all, because we all know how crazy I get for when my fellow peoples fights on the card, especially when they're holding the title. It's a big one, man. I mean, they just bumped up. I'm glad they updated the website before we recorded. They bumped up Rodolfo Vera and Wellington Turman up to the main card because they lost the Olenek Hardy or Spivak or whoever was supposed to be there. They're off the card, so they got bumped up to the main card as opposed to being that last prelim. So I mean, where do you want to start, Matt? Shall we look at the main? Shall we look at the what do you want to start with?
I mean, I'm being honest, there's the prelims are not exactly there's a couple good cards, you know, Kay Hansen on the card.
Yeah, she starts. She's the first fight.
Topuria. Yeah. Jourdain's a great fight. You know, Victor Henry coming to the UFC is nice to see. But other than that, you know, it's just not the best. Doesn't mean that the fights aren't going to be outstanding, and I would recommend watching them, but again, not what I learned to, you know, I've learned over 25, 30 years of expecting to get out of a pay-per-view. So if we jump to the main card,
This podcast, we never do, I mean, full event picks anyway.
Correct.
We usually do the main card anyway. So let's look at the first fight. Rodolfo Vera versus Wellington Turman. I actually had to do a lot of last minute homework on this one today, since the outlet that likes to do everything mad fucking early wanted the stuff by tonight, and you know, this is usually my warm up for those picks, this podcast. So I did a lot of looking into it. I mean, and these are the numbers here. Before we look at their details, look at the odds here. Rodolfo Vera was the favorite, and I see why. But when I look at their experience, I'm like, it makes me kind of like, you know, wonder why. And then I look deeper into Rodolfo's Vera. I mean, of course, you know, they're not for nothing, they're both jiu-jitsu guys. Looking at Rodolfo's record, like he's let me bring up my notes. He's you know, he's 8-1 and 7 of his wins come by way of submission. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's why he's the favorite, the way that they're making him the favorite. But I feel like Terman's experience, yes, he has 5 losses, but he's never been submitted. None of the losses are submissions. I feel like he can upset the odds here, and so that's actually the guy I'm picking to win in this fight.
Yeah, I mean, even minus or plus 185 isn't terrible underdog odds. But like you said, that's a good bet to throw on there. I mean, I tend to lean Vieira. Turnman's, you know, he won his last fight against Sam Alvey, which doesn't carry as much weight as it did at one point. Prior to that, he was on a 2-fight losing streak. Actually, he lost 3 out of the last 4 with his win over Marcus Perez, who's no longer in the UFC, actually fought at the last San Diego Cage Warriors event. I think Vieira basically, you know, his one loss was that shocking submission loss to Hernandez. Not going to say a fluke, but kind of. I wouldn't expect him to lose by submission many times in his career. I'm going to pick him to win. I don't necessarily know by submission, but maybe by just control and decision. Because Turnman's losses, he does have some decision losses. You know, and one of his losses was ground and pound. So I'm wondering, you know, what his, once he gets taken down, I'll have to see what he does. You know, I lean Vieira, you know, maybe it's kind of the old school jiu-jitsu, you know, hope that, you know, you get that guy who just comes in and eventually turns it on and subs everybody. But yeah, I'm going to go with Vieira. Good fight. It was initially the prelim headliner. So it got bumped up, like you said.
Yeah.
Prelim headliners tend to be fights that they think are going to be barn burners because obviously they want to sell the pay-per-view based off of it. So,
yeah, there's people complaining that they thought it should have been,
Topuria and,
And, but like you said, I looked at that. I see the same thing. I see a potential, you know, they want that first fight to kind of be something either fast paced or ending that or ending. Being able to end quickly, and then especially with 2 title fights, you know, pacing is going to be, it's going to be a late night for me. That's for damn sure.
Yeah, it all depends. But you got a title fight that could end in 32 seconds. So
that's true, too.
That slow you down. Second fight on the main card, Cody Stamann versus Syed Nurmagomedov. Nurmagomedov, according to the UFC site, 14-2. Stamann, 19-4. You know, Stamann's on a 2-fight losing streak, although Dashvili and Jimmy Rivera aren't slouches, especially Dashvili is you know, he lost his last fight, but he's on been on a nice run. Nurmagomedov carries the name and you know, makes it hard to pick against Nurmagomedov. You know, he's coming off a win after a loss in the UFC to Barcelos.
He's like minus 200 for this, right? Yeah, minus 200.
So, again, I mean, odds-wise, this is actually a fun fight, a fun card. It looks like maybe to parlay based off the odds being semi-close. It would be one if you hit 3 or 4 of them, you'd get a nice little payday without risking, you know, having to bet on a plus, you know, 600 or something to try to salvage it. I'm going to go with Nurmagomedov. Like I said, Stamann on a 2-fight losing streak is never a good thing, although against good competition. I'll take Nurmagomedov. I think I'm going to go with another decision here. So, yeah, I might be the way I'm going, it will be a long night for you.
Well, no, we're on the same page with that, too. I mean, looking at the record, looking at their records, and, again, having to rush through my research to do the picks for this, I mean, it was hard for me not to – just again, I mean, when you see these dudes with these cut of beard and no mustache and that last name, you expect to get your ass dragged across the cage for a good 3 rounds. So, yeah, that's where I'm at with that one.
move to the feature fight of the main card. Michael Pereira versus Andre Fiallo. Late replacement. Fiallo steps in. But I'm going to pick him to win. Pereira has been, you know, he's got all the highlight videos of him flipping around. Hasn't been incredibly successful in the UFC. He had the, you know, he's won three in a row, and the Diego Sanchez fight, he was dominating. He did get upset by a small, much smaller fighter who wrestled him and dragged him around in his debut. But I'm going to go with the guy coming from LFA. You know, he's got three losses. When you start having 11 losses, I mean, and your name's not like Jorge Masvidal, you know, I feel like you don't go on 4-5 fight win streaks. You know, when there's a reason why you're 26-11, it usually means you win two or three and then you lose a fight. So I'm just going to kind of go with that. But I think this fight has potential fireworks. You just never know what you're going to get with the crazy dude. You know, when he was flipping off the cage and losing fights, it was still fun because you were seeing something you had never seen before. Once he gets, you know, taken down and wrestled to a decision loss, and then some of the other shenanigans that he's had. But I'm going to go with the Fiallo. What are the
other? That's interesting.
No current odds on this fight. Is it because it's such a late replacement yet? Or is
let me see. No, I think there's something up there, right? Oh, no, you're right.
Okay, so, yeah, they're holding off as of when the website put... I mean, they don't have a picture for the guy yet.
Yeah,
so,
I didn't... I should have looked when I was on DraftKings earlier, placing my parlay that I already put in. But, I'm going with the guy that's got a picture on the website. So I'm going with Fair. Again, like you said, he's short notice or whatever, and when I was looking at the records, I mean, it's just... More often than not, the last minute fighter does not, you know, do well, especially when you know, on this particular stage of the UFC. And then whoo-wee.
Then we get into the fights that the people are paying for and where the drunks will come from the bar to finally take their seats in the arena. The trilogy, Brandon Moreno, Davison Figueiredo, sits at one win for Moreno. No wins for Figueiredo and a draw between the two of them. This is potentially the end of the trilogy or potentially the start of a, what'd you call it? Quadruple E or
the video game rules. Best two out of three.
Yep. Yeah. You just gotta keep whoever gets two wins first. So, man, last time they fought, I picked Figueiredo, and obviously Moreno came out and had the performance. I mean, very well might be the performance of his career. I mean, he fought a flawless fight against a extremely, you know, a great opponent and was able to finish him.
Yeah.
I want to pick Figueiredo because I want this to become like...
They can't keep fighting each other forever, man.
No, but, you know, why not? You know, like, I mean, I talked about not wanting to see Holloway and stuff. You know, certain fights, it gets old, you know?
Yeah.
But I feel like there's still some freshness to this, just based off the fact that their first fight was, like, you know, a fight of the year. The second fight had so much storyline and so much emotion. Moreno winning the title in Arizona in front of, you know, 60% of the arena being, you know, Hispanic. It added so much to it. This one, you know, although coming back to Southern California, he's obviously going to have a big, likely will have a big following in the arena as well. So I got to pick Moreno based off the last performance. It would be hard not to because he was so dominant. But if the MMA gods have their way, I think we might be looking at the first four fight series in UFC history.
Yeah, I can't get tired of it. Like when I remember when this one was announced, I was just like, did I want to see this fight? No. But I mean, did I want to see it done this soon or whatever? I was like, no, but does it bother me? Absolutely not. I'll watch these guys fight. I don't care how many times. And I mean, no surprise for anyone that listens to this podcast or follows me knows I've already made my pick with Brandon Moreno. The only thing is, and I'm more confident with it, you know, today was media day over there. And I was watching a clip of Fajardo addressing the media, and he had on sunglasses inside. And that's usually like he's trying to hide something, again, with his weight cut or whatever. We know he's had some rough weight cuts. Usually there's some other detail that comes out after the fight, even with the draw and then the loss. Like there's something, there's always something else going on with him. And I mean, that was one of my problems with him as a champion was that there was always like that. You always had to worry about him, you know, doing something to kind of ruin the glory and the moment of the matchup. So I feel like we're already kind of seeing the beginning of that. I don't see him coming in as 100% as Moreno, you know, will be coming in. So it's an easy pick for me to pick Brandon Moreno again.
God, you bring up a good point. Where the hell does this fight series go if Figueiredo misses weight and then beats Moreno in a fight where he can't take the title? Well, I mean, that actually sparks me up a little bit, because that would be the chaos that, you know, that's Chael Sonnen beating John Jones with a broken toe kind of shit. That would be that would throw everything into chaos. You know, you mentioned Brandon Royval, who picked up a nice win over the weekend. Mm-hmm. You know, him kind of sitting on the sidelines and being able to potentially be the next matchup for either one of these guys.
I heard that it was up in the air, but they actually kind of like have him on call too to like fill in for
a backup.
And I mean, imagine that. Not for nothing, we've had Brandon on the podcast too, and he told us about how he like tries to emulate other, you know, fighters from before him that were in the same weight class of Mexican fighters. Who's the guy that I'm thinking of? The one that got his leg messed up, that kind of messed up his career. Miguel Lopez?
Torres? I can't remember.
Miguel Torres. Yeah.
Okay.
But I mean, that was a fight that I feel like we didn't get. You know, and I said this on the Sunday submission thing I do for MMAnews.com. That's a fight that, because of Royval's shoulder injury that happened, we didn't really get to see the firefight that could have been. Imagine if that happened. I mean, not for nothing, if that happens, it's actually like even better. And maybe it's a sign of better things to come in the year of 2022. But, you know, I'm not going to, like you said, I mean, if what you said happens, that's a bad sign. That's a bad.
Here's another thing. What if Royval is the backup, weighs in and makes championship weight?
Mm-hmm.
Figueiredo weighs in and weighs 137 or 127. Do they pull him from a fight just because he missed weight by? What if he misses weight by a pound and it's no longer a title fight? Do they pull him and give Royval the fight?
I don't know.
Are they allowed to do that? I mean, there's a lot of what ifs. But you mentioned him making having his weight issues. That throws a whole other thing in here. The odds are interesting. I'm actually surprised Moreno's not a little bit bigger of a favorite finish, considering he had a second round finish in the last fight.
Yeah.
You know, you don't see that very often.
Well, that's because, I mean, in both fights, Figueiredo had his moments, and he's got that guillotine that, you know, if they're dry and he locks it in, the chances of getting out are slim.
Yeah.
You know, Moreno does have that weird way of holding his hands when he fights, strikes, and squares off that kind of leaves his chin open. And it's crazy because it's dangerous, but he also does it to make the guy engage and draw you into the hell that he has waiting for you. I'm not going to be surprised if they get fight of the night, you know, when this thing is over. But this is drama.
The big boys, what this sport was initially built on, the heavyweights,
drama fight.
Ciryl Gane, Francis Ngannou. Champ versus interim champ, 16-3 versus 10-0. Man, 250, 245. I mean, this is big boys. This is a true heavyweight championship, you know, of the world, I would say. No disrespect to Moldovsky or Ryan Bader currently over in Bellator, but it would be hard to argue that these aren't the two best heavyweights, at least, you know, that have earned their way to a title fight. You know, I'm everything about me wants Ngannou just to go out there and do a devastating, decapitating KO like we've seen several times. I don't think he's going to do it. I think Ciryl Gane's going to box him up. I think he's going to use his technique and be able to use some range. And I think if he's able to survive the initial hurricane of Ngannou's, you know, what you get in like the first 45 seconds mm-hmm. for against him, I think it might actually end up being a fairly easy night for Ngannou. Once he gets through that, because I don't, you know, we've seen Ngannou against Stipe when he was the nail, you know, and when he was the nail, he wasn't good. He got beat pillar post for 5 rounds. When he was the hammer, it ended real quick and he was able just to walk. So I don't think he's going to be able, I think Stipe might have gotten a little bit overconfident based off of the domination of their first fight. Mm-hmm. I don't see Gon doing that. Gon impressed me against Volkov, some of these other guys that, you know, I thought would give him more trouble. And I don't know where Ngannou's head is. When you start talking about your next move, when you're the heavyweight champion of the UFC and not like your current move, when you're fighting a monster across the ring from you, I start to question where your heart's at. You know, are you thinking about dollar signs as opposed to your livelihood while entering that cage? And I feel like that no matter, even if we never find out if it had anything to do with it, I just can't see how that doesn't take away from some of your training and preparation.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
When you're constantly getting asked questions about Tyson Fury, or you're getting asked questions about,
and Tyson Fury's calling you out himself on social media. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Tyson Fury's basically going, dude, you figure out a way to, you win this fight, get out of your contract somehow. You got a $25 million payday waiting for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and that's, and again, oh my gosh, the lawyer, McCracken on,
Eric McCracken, combat sports law. Yeah.
He pointed out that, you know, Ngannou's got to lose this fight to end his contract. Mm-hmm. If he wins the fight, his contract extends. He doesn't get a pay raise. Nothing changes for him. He'll likely hold out and we'll have, you know, another interim title fight for, you know, I don't know, Volkov and Gon again, rematch, or Lewis, you know, the winner of the Lewis fight coming up. Lewis just won his last fight. So maybe he, you know, it all of a sudden everything changes again. We might get another interim title fight for Gon Lewis, you know, if Ngannou decides to hold out. I don't see him just deciding that he's all of a sudden going to keep his contract and be happy about it.
Yeah,
you know, and if he wins, I hope he actually leads the charge to maybe help break the contract, you know, chaos that they have. The idea that your contract automatically extends at the current rate is pretty frigging criminal.
Yeah,
you know, and it disincentivizes somebody like him to win this fight. And yeah. I wonder when we ever get to the day where someone walks in the cage, taps on the wall, and walks out of the ring.
Some WCW nonsense,
basically. Yeah.
So you know what's funny? I mean, you mentioned a lot of the things that it looks like it's not just on mine and your mind. Like you said, Eric McGracken mentioned it. I mean, first of all, if you set the contract stuff aside, these are two guys that have trained with each other, know each other, and then as far as like a Gon's experience as a striker from Muay Thai, I wouldn't be surprised if it's a 5-round snooze fest of him doing teeps and front leg kicks and just to keeping Ngannou at bay for the first 2-3 rounds, get him exhausted, frustrated, and then, you know, maybe start to an onslaught and punch at him where his power kind of fades, his speed kind of fades, and you know, those big muscles of his. As Boss Rutan says, big guys like that need a lot of oxygen. So it's definitely something that Gon probably has up his sleeve because he's the more technical striker. I mean, when you look at Francis Ngannou, what makes him famous is his power and his speed. So he's got more than a puncher's chance, but that as the rounds go on, that goes away. And I think Gon is just more of the chess player in this fight. This is outside of all. And plus, again, they know each other. Guys that train together, they know the reads. They can read each other more. They know about their mistakes. They know their strengths and their weaknesses a little better. I mean, if you look back at Usman versus Burns, even with this training camp split up, Burns, there was a moment where Burns in the first round, you know, hurt Usman. You know what I mean? And it took Usman a while to come back and, you know, figure things out and eventually get the win that he got. But, you know, that's something that you have to take into account too. So there's a lot of, I completely understand why the odds are the way they are. That being said, I mean, you know, I'm picking Gunn. You said you're picking Gunn too?
Yeah. I'm picking him to win by I don't really want to say decision.
Yeah.
I kind of see it working the same way as you, you know. Mm-hmm. I think he might use some leg kicks. You know, you slow down Ngannou, you hit him with a couple good kicks to the legs. Yeah. You know, you take away some of his balance. He seemed to have, he hasn't always had the great balance anyway. I mean, a lot of his punches, knockouts have been kind of, you know, other than the Overeem uppercut, which was pretty sweet. Mm-hmm. You know, his Rozenstruik knockout, even Kane was like a flurry. They're both all flurries where he kind of just, you know, bull rushed and you know, you don't survive. If he hits you, you don't survive.
Yeah.
So, but I also, those guys kind of stood right in front of him. You know, I feel like Gon might play more the bullfighter as opposed to, you know, the opposing bull who's just going to go, you know, head to head and ram each other. So, you know, and I feel like Gon is fighting for what Ngannou thinks he already has. Mm-hmm. Gon's fighting for that big UFC championship pay. Gon's fighting for the credibility and the
he poster. Wants to be a champion, not an interim champion.
You know, whereas Ngannou's kind of jumping the gun a little bit, like I've said in the past. I don't know. I guess we'll find out about, you know, we'll never really know the numbers, but in theory, we'll hear about how the pay-per-view sells, which will be a big thing, because if they sell 240,000 pay-per-views, even 400,000, that might change Tyson Fury's opinion a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, and if Ngannou loses this fight, I then wonder where he ends up, because you've just pissed off your UFC bosses. You have very little. If he gets boxed up by Gon, he's not going to go in the ring with Wilder or Fury. Mm-hmm. I mean, in any kind of real competitive, you know, no one's going to tune in and be like, oh, he's got a chance to win. Doesn't mean he can't land a big knockout punch, but you know, he kind of talked himself into a corner because he can't get out of the contract unless he loses. And if he loses, he might end up, the UFC could easily come back and go, dude, go see what you can get. You think you can get $250,000 from Bellator? Go take $250,000 from Bellator.
Yeah.
You know, he might end up getting a pay cut, which would be crazy in itself, but not, you know, when you play those kind of games with the UFC, the UFC has proven over the years that they don't usually lose those
they
cases.
They usually win. You're right about that. So, really quick, I mean, I was making notes, but I got so excited talking about Moreno Figueiredo. Who was your pick for that, the co-main?
I'm going with Moreno. Oh, okay. I'd love to see Figueiredo win, but I'm going to go with Moreno. I can't pick against a guy who finished his opponent.
I want to start making notes of every time we do these pay-per-view picks and stuff, just to see, like, kind of do a tally, maybe like in 6 months or 3 months, just to kind of, so we can break each other's balls and who's more right and who's more wrong or whatever. But before we close out, I just really quick, I want to plug this whole thing that I mentioned about getting pissed off about having to submit some picks early to one of the outlets I write for. It kind of lit a fire under my ass. If folks that follow the podcast and the YouTube channel and stuff know, I always drop a link for the newsletter that I started kind of the final quarter of last year. And I'm going to start doing like picks for events on that newsletter too. So I'd appreciate it if you haven't subscribed. It's free. It doesn't cost anything, but you know, just breakdowns like this will be on there, at least from my end. I'm going to be putting that. So if you want some more fight picks, you like the stuff we do. I mean, I'm somewhat, I'm a little over 50%, right? Sometimes most of the time. So I got to check my Tapology score, but, so if you don't mind, check out the newsletter. The links will be in the bottom of the podcast and the YouTube channel and stuff like that. But, man, I'm looking forward to this, man. I mean, it's good to get the year going, starting fresh and, you know,
no, it's great. Going. You got this UFC heavyweight championship. The following week, we got BKFC returning for the first time this year. And then the Bellator's got their heavyweight championship. So we got some heavyweight championship talk to talk over the next week. And certainly will be interesting, depending on how, you know, especially if Moldovsky wins in Bellator, then we can start maybe that talk again. You know, Bader lost a little bit of steam with his loss to Nemkov and Corey Anderson, but Moldovsky has a chance to kind of keep the idea that there's another, you know, there's another heavyweight out there that really could contend with these guys. So fun couple weeks of action. Nice to get 2022 going with some fights. And however you end up watching the UFC this weekend, I recommend watching it and cracking a beverage and just watching, you know, two of the most exciting smaller fighters in the UFC. And like I said, the heavyweight championship is what, you know, whether people like to admit it or not, it's what the heavyweight, what the sport was based on, was who is the biggest, baddest man on the planet. And in theory, we will find that out on Saturday night. So until then, fans can check out the podcast at Combat Hour on Twitter, Coast to Coast Combat Hour on Instagram. Follow me, Matthew Hawkins, at MMAHawk21 on Twitter and Instagram. Follow Ed at Carbazol on Twitter, Carbirzol on Instagram, and Old Head Carb on Twitch. And as usual, every week you can check us out. We are brought to you by AllAccessMMA.com. Check out AllAccessMMA.com for our video podcast and your MMA news. Ed, enjoy the rest of the week. I guess try to stay warm. I think you're still dealing with some cold, a cold world out there. And
yeah, absolutely.
And if you end up at the bars, enjoy yourself there, and hopefully the clientele around you is
tolerable. Yeah. I'll see you next week.
All right, have a good one.